I think for me, don't bury your head in the sand. Take some ownership over the situation a little bit earlier.
It's an uninformed assumption from those medical practitioners, not knowing essentially what they're talking about.
I've done a lot of work reflecting on it and helping to contain a guilty mindset.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. We are joined by another incredible member of the Nexus community. Welcome, Danny.
How are we?
Oh, we're good, mate. We're good, mate. All the better for having you here, mate. Thanks so much for jumping on. And let's start right at the beginning. Give us a brief outline of, I'm going to say it really early, journey.
Yeah, so it has been exactly that. It has been a journey. I think the more people that I talk to in a similar position, it really is a journey and a roller coaster, and a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And this is what's brought me here, just to talk about my experiences and hopefully give other people a little bit of support. And I think the more people we can relate to, the better. And in terms of our specific journey, probably maybe a little bit shorter than other people. We only got our diagnosis, if you will, around 3 years ago or so. So we first found out back in April 2023 that conception for us naturally, in the doctor's words, would be negligible. And that day really does stick out in my mind in the way that the news was delivered. I think the soft skills and being personable at that point, it didn't really apply. And hearing the news in the way that we did, and it changes your whole world in that moment, was delivered in a way that probably hit a little bit harshly. So I just remember sitting in this little room with a consultant at the NHS, and we spent maybe a good 20 minutes talking through all of my wife's results, and effectively all of her results were perfectly fine, other than her FSH levels, but everything else looking perfectly normal, healthy, and within the parameters that they would expect. And then they turned to me and said, yeah, Danny, your count's effectively below 1 million. And I think at that time I was maybe a little bit naive, and I wasn't sure what parameters I needed, what good motility, what good morphology, what a good total count is. I was probably should have done maybe a bit more research myself going into that appointment. But I think at that time, to me, ignorance was bliss, and the less that I knew was better in that trying to almost protect myself. So when I heard the count of 1 million, it didn't really register with me that that was a bad thing at the time. But it wasn't until afterwards they just said, yeah, so with that count, your chances of natural conception are negligible. With that information, what you will, and you need to make a decision from there. And probably the most likely route for you will be donor conception. So off the back of that, obviously felt quite upset, as my wife was my wife. And I think at that point, you're just left with a lot of questions. And at that point, you feel as though there's a lot that we need to go away and learn. And I think it immediately forces you into this place where you have to have some very difficult conversations that you've not even really planned on having or had any foresight about some of the conversations that you're going to have. So that's where our journey started. And then from there, we didn't want to immediately go down the donor conception route. And even though that was something that I was more than willing to do, because in my mind, I wanted to do everything that I could to give my wife the experience of being pregnant. So for me, it was an option, but at the same time, we wanted to make sure that we're exploring all options possible to us. And so that's when we started to look into different IVF pathways, if you will. And we spent the best part of a year trying to obtain NHS funding for our journey. And that's where things probably got a little bit more pressurized and a little bit more stressful, because even though it was predominantly male factor infertility that led us into this journey as part of the NHS kind of criteria to qualify for the funding. We didn't quite meet it based on my wife's FSH levels. So there were multiple tests, maybe one or two, sometimes 3 months apart to assess those levels. And eventually, I think after about 6 months, we met their criteria. But unfortunately, those results were lost. So we had to go back through the testing procedure all over again. And of course, my wife's FSH levels didn't meet the criteria on the fourth and fifth test. So it wasn't until we got back round to the sixth test, I think it was, where FSH levels qualified again. So we spent the best part of the year just trying to get into a position to obtain the funding. And lucky enough, we were very fortunate in that we did qualify, and that's where our IVF journey started. And we were informed that because it's male factor infertility, we would be having IVF via the ICSI route. And ultimately, again, probably a little bit naive, and perhaps we thought that, well, okay, that will solve our issues and that will be the answer to it all. So in April 2024, we had our first round of ICSI, and unfortunately that didn't work. We more or less went straight back in with a second round, had a small break for a couple of months, and had our second round in July 2024. And unfortunately, that wasn't successful either. And I think at that point, again, I think the deeper you get into the journey, you start to do a little bit more of your own research, and you start to look into things a little bit more, and you want to learn a lot more and not just rely on people to give you what you think is the right thing to do, but I guess need to make more informed decisions and more educated decisions. And that's where your services have been valuable, because it's helped us to delve into things a little bit more and understand our own situation a little bit more, because everyone's journey and everyone's issues are so individualized that I guess a standardized protocol isn't always the way to go. And I guess in some cases as well, that we'll get into this in a moment, but with the specific issues that I have, we now know that going straight into ICSI never would have worked. So in some ways, I almost felt guilty that I took the NHS funding and almost wasted that opportunity in a way, without kind of peeling away another layer and understanding my own issues and what needed to be done about it before actually going in IVF journey. Because in my mind, and I've done a lot of work to not feel guilty, but you can't help but reflect a little bit and think, perhaps if I put the work in to understand my own issues a little bit further, a little bit deeper, and learn more about the issues that I'm having, perhaps that painful journey of the two failed rounds could have been avoided.
Yeah, you've been a bit harsh on yourself there, because you know, it's like having your life turned upside down, isn't it? That diagnosis. And we don't know all this stuff. You don't know what you don't know and all that. And yeah, it's a whole new world. All these new medical terms, said even from the initial semen analysis results, and this is absolutely no criticism, but not even knowing that a million is very low. But why would you? You hear a million and you think it only takes one and all that. And that's really, what you said about feeling guilty for taking the NHS funding, I don't feel that you should be, because obviously you pay into it and you're entitled to it. But it's not just the funding and the money that those rounds cost. It was the heartbreak, the emotion that you poured into it, the physical nature of what your other half would have been doing with the injections and stuff. So there's a lot of frustration there, I think. And yeah, bless you for the first thing you're saying about the NHS.
I just feel as though I've done a lot of work reflecting on it and helping to contain a guilty mindset and things like that. But I think everyone's just wiser after the event, aren't they? And once you reflect on something, you realise that perhaps that you could have done things differently. That kind of led us into more investigations, and through a bit of our own research and through hearing other people part of this group, hearing more and more about Jonathan Ramsay, took us down a deeper line of investigation. So we saw him in late 2024, I think around October, November 2024. And the initial diagnosis with that was due to a large varicocele and that creating oxidative stress. So that was the primary thing for us to address. So I had conversation with Stephen Moser in January 2025. He was really happy with the result, so treated it really well. But again, after 3 months, had a follow-up analysis and effectively was told that it's had no effect on the fragmentation whatsoever. So again, that left us with questions about where do we go from here. We've identified what we believed was the primary cause of the issue, and having addressed that, it not really changing anything. So again, question, where do we go from here? And at that point, that's where we started to have those conversations about donor conception or adoption, or do we still try another round of IVF? But at this point, you're then having to consider the financial implications of funding the IVF yourselves as well. So again, there's just quite a lot of difficult conversations and quite a lot of decisions to be made at that point. In some ways, it can make you a lot closer as a couple. And I felt that like we've been a really good team throughout the journey, but also at the same time, it can become quite a stressful situation, a pressurized situation, and it can take its toll a little bit at times. And that's where I probably had to work on myself a lot to change my guilty mindset. And one of my friends summed it up perfectly. And it's quite a good analogy in that he said when he was in the army and done something wrong, it wouldn't be him that was punished. It was his peers around him that would be set some form of chore or punishment. And he said, I can imagine that's how you feel, that you would rather take the punishment yourself rather than watch your other half suffer because of it. And that was exactly my mindset. So she's been really good in that she's helped me to understand that I never asked for this, and there was nothing that I could have ever done to influence my diagnosis, and therefore I shouldn't feel guilty. But I think a lot of people fall into that. I think that's hearing a lot of other stories. I think that's something that people react with, I guess, in the first instance. There's almost a blame culture of blaming yourself. And that's one thing that I'd really encourage and have tried to encourage others not to do, as difficult as that is.
It's something that is so common. It comes up with guys, and there's a lot of belief surface there about our perceived roles being like the kind of providers, protectors, etc., and not wanting to put other people in any form of pain emotionally or whatever else as a result of us. And I was going to come back to that, actually, because I remember you saying like earlier about really working on that guilt and blame aspect in yourself. And that's a really healthy perspective to have, because it comes down to the fact that it isn't your fault. It isn't something that you've done or chosen to do. It's a really shit hand that's been dealt, and it's how you deal with it that is important. How long did it take you to reach that point? How much work was in that?
I think for me, it probably took a good couple of years in total. And I only started to probably be kinder to myself about it within the most recent few months. And I think it's a fine balance between taking responsibility and ownership, but also being kind to yourself in that you recognize that you never asked for this situation, but it's about what you can do going forward and how supportive you can be, rather than, you know, just blaming yourself for being in this situation in the first place. Neither of you asked for it, but it's how you deal with it together and how you support each other. So try to flip things on its head that, okay, we're in this situation and this is what we're having to deal with, but what can I do going forward to make my wife feel more comforted and more supported, more positive about it? And again, we've been in a position whereby, yes, of course, we've had to pay for private IVF now, but I've tried to adopt the mindset that we're fortunate that we're in a position that we can do that, and it is an option for us, because there's so many people out there that if they manage to secure NHS funding and it doesn't work, for some people that's the end of their journey, because they're not in a position to be able to fund things privately. So I've tried to flip my mindset into a more positive way and recognize that I'm fortunate to have the opportunities that I have. So although, yes, been dealt a bit of a crap hand, it doesn't mean that I can't still make my own decisions to an extent, if that makes sense. So yeah, I just think taking a little bit of ownership and recognizing that there are still things that I can do to improve our situation, and I can't do any more than that. So that's helped me to feel better about myself.
Yeah, I feel that sense of that little bit of control you can take is really powerful. And we've had a discussion recently on another podcast similar to that, in terms of how it can be really self-empowering. Even if you feel like everything's out of control, actually identifying things that you can focus on and take control of helps you process everything. What you've explained, like you said at the beginning, and you're going to talk us through your journey, you have really had a journey, mate. We've talked about maybe the lack of education, you not knowing that a million isn't the best result, medical mistakes that have been made. That's important to highlight. The loss of tests. I was watching Sean's face when you explained that you got a million as a result, and they automatically went to donor conception. Like, that is, I've never heard of that before. That's quite a big leap for me, without looking at what might be causing things. It's a very, in some ways, drastic first assumption, isn't it? At the Male Fertility Podcast, we know how powerful the right support can be, which is why we've partnered with Fertility Family to share Imperil. That nutrition matters when it comes to fertility. But let's be honest, maintaining a perfectly balanced diet for conception is incredibly hard. Choosing a supplement can be just as confusing, especially when many multivitamins contain strong antioxidants that can actually harm sperm quality. Imperil is different. It's made from activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously been struggling to conceive. Imperil is different. It's made using activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously struggled to conceive. What we like is that behind the science at Fertility Family are real stories from real people. To find out more, visit www.fertilityfamily.co.uk. And if you decide it's right for you, our listeners get 10% off using the code MFPOD10. That's MFPOD10. Now, back to the episode.
Uninformed assumption from those medical practitioners, not knowing essentially what they're talking about. Like, there's a hell of a load of sperm there to be worked on, not to mention other interventions that can potentially increase not just the total count, but the quality of them as well.
Because mine was significantly lower than that, and it was never, the donor conception discussion never came up. It might have come up if we'd gone further down and there hadn't been success, but that really took me back. It's taken me a few minutes to process that myself, sat here. How, when that was delivered like that, because I think it's important to highlight it, that information was delivered incorrectly, because it was. In the moment, what did you think and how did you feel? Was it a rabbit in headlights moment, or, how did you feel when you heard that?
Yeah, I think for me, as cliche as it sounds, it hit me for six a little bit, in that it just felt like a huge jump. And I just felt as though surely there is more to the picture, or surely there's other investigations that could be done. Because as you say, okay, in the grand scheme of things, a million is low, but as you say, it only takes one. So I just felt as though, why is there not any possibility or any alternative to jumping straight into donor conception? And I was left even a little bit more confused with it. Similar timeline, one of my friends, you won't mind me saying, but he remembers his initial appointment and he was effectively told a normal count would be somewhere between 12 to 15 million for natural conception. That's an approximate threshold. And they said, you have six. And so he was thinking, I'm halfway there. 6 million isn't that bad. And they said, oh, no, not 6 million. You have just six. And yeah, that, granted, they did go down the IVF route, but they were successful first time. And yeah, so it just didn't quite add up to me. And we were told a similar thing after our second failed round of it. The consultant said, I think it's time to look at donor conception. But at that point, we hadn't seen a male urologist. So it just felt as though at times I might as well not been in the room. At times it felt that everything was about my wife. And to an extent, I get that. They go through a lot more procedurally. But I just felt as though no one ever really looked at me. And it wasn't until we took things into our own hands. And we just felt it was a little bit odd that there was recognition that it's male factor infertility, but all of the testing and all of the conversations and all of the appointments were focused on my wife, and there was never any light shone on my situation. And
no, you're just sitting there, you're the driver, you're the coat carrier.
Yeah, that's how it felt, just almost a little bit dismissive in a way.
It's so common. Like, it's the same. Me and Sean have talked to thousands of guys now, and we hear this so often. Like, men are just ignored. Like, we are half in a couple, there's two halves, and one is completely ignored. And there's sometimes when I wouldn't say we have to be ignored, but the focus has to be on the woman because they're in a certain procedure they've got to go through, and the focus has to shift. But especially when it's male factor, that narrative has to change. And it's something that me and Sean are so passionate about doing, and that's why we do this. Like, it generally makes me angry, like, hearing how you've been treated, mate. It really makes me sad as well. Like, this shouldn't be happening. We can put people on the bloody moon, do you know what I mean? But we can't acknowledge a man in a room who's going through fertility treatment of a condition he has. And it still blows my mind. It's still absolutely blows my mind.
Like, aftercare from the failed cycles, how was that?
Somewhat non-existent. I think maybe a little bit performative in that they offer an in-house counsellor, but it never felt as though there was like genuine care there in a way. It just felt as though you've had your second round, it was unsuccessful. Best of luck from here, almost felt washed their hands with us in a way. So that's where we really started to take things into our own hands. So that kind of took us into 2025 and having the embolization and then that having no effect. So that's when Ramsey suggested that we do a COMET test and use of the Zymot device to look at double DNA fragmentation, I think I've said that. And that's what was identified. So we really got to a deeper layer of the issue. And long story short, the reason that I have this was I was born incredibly prematurely. So Ramsey's kind of attributed my situation to the fact that because I was born so prematurely, effectively the factory, as he described it, that creates the sperm never got the chance to fully develop. So I think I was around 10 weeks premature, and I'm also a twin, and apparently that has a factor in it as well. So again, I think at that point, that really helped me to shift the guilty mindset as well. Hearing that news that I was effectively born into this situation, there's absolutely nothing that I could do to influence it whatsoever. That really helped with the sense of guilt in that there's no lifestyle factors, even though I've tried to look after myself, maintain a good diet, I exercise, so on and so forth. that in itself doesn't really help with my set of circumstances. There was very little control there. And I think just hearing that it's not something that I've done to myself, it's also not something that I've chosen, that really helped. So it was that point where my mind was in two different places. One, there was a sense of relief that there was nothing that I could do to influence my results as such, but at the same time, it also felt quite high stakes in that if the results didn't go the way we wanted with the use of DesignMart, then, you know, that somewhat could have been the end of our IVF journey. And that's when we started to look more actively into the Donor Conception Network and attended one of your webinars to learn a lot more about it. And we made the decision that if it takes a donor for us to have a child together, then, you know, we're all for it. So we had those conversations and we made our peace with it, and it was something that we were willing to do. But luckily, the testing went well. There was significant improvement with use of DesignMart, and the double-strand fragmentation went down from 16% to 3%. So we had a really good result with that. And off the back of that, we had a third round of ICSI with the use of DesignMart at the EVEWELL. We started that in September. And yeah, we're currently 6 months pregnant. So yeah, things are looking up.
Amazing. Congratulations to you both.
We're buzzing. Yeah.
It's amazing what appropriate testing as well can do, and not just taking things at face value or even less than face value, really. I still can't get over that thing of, oh, you've only got a million, you have to look at donor conception. I think clinics sometimes have been criticized for jumping to ICSI too quickly, that they skipped that completely. We talked about how you were treated or not in this case, not even acknowledged in the clinic. Did that differ when you went to, you finally got in front of a male specialist? And if so, how?
Yeah, very much. It just felt as though the right questions were being asked. And it just felt as though there was a shift in focus, in that, although, yes, my wife's the one that procedurally has to go through a lot more with the injections and the progesterone, they're the one at the end of the day that's carrying the child. It just felt as though there was a real sense of inclusion of both of us. So even though we were there to discuss my issues, I think Ramsey was very good in making sure that Brogan was also included and explained things to her as well as me, and included us together. And it felt as though we were working more of a team, and it wasn't my issue versus her issue or vice versa. It was, these are the results on your side, these are the results on Danny's side, this is what we need to do between the two of you to make things work. So it just felt that things were more holistic, if that makes sense. And it just felt as though it was more individualized, and there wasn't a standardized protocol that needed to be followed. It was adaptive and inclusive. He really put our minds at ease.
There's two of you going through this same experience, and you have to, I'm sure we can all echo the fact that there's sometimes you have to give more to her or she gives more to you because you need that support. But yeah, that individualized care is at the right time, the appropriate time, is so important. It can't always be like that because obviously there's an end goal that you've got to focus on. But yeah, I can easily see how Jonathan, just making you feel acknowledged is the biggest thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so for sure.
It's that kind of, yeah, this is the issue, or I see you, let's find out the issue.
Yeah.
Because it's just not happening. And it's amazing that Jonathan is brought up so much on our pod and conversations and that, but it's also sad that quite often he's the only one brought up. The industry has to learn that there are people out there doing fantastic work, and there's people out there that, to just acknowledge men more. That's all we want. If you don't know, I've always said, if you don't know, you pass them on to someone that does. And that's really key, really key. You said it strengthened your relationship with your partner.
Yeah, very much. I think it's brought us, we've always been close, but we've been together forever, just over 18 years now. So we've always been close. But I think having that shared experience of something that you deem so important, and it being almost like the final piece of the puzzle, it brings you closer together. And I think having those difficult conversations and being open about what we're willing to do for each other to achieve a family, it goes a long way. It makes you realize like how loved you are, that she was willing to put her body through so much for us to have a child together, willing to stick by me when things were going wrong, and at times it looked like maybe children were never going to be a possibility for us. And then it starts making you think, well, who are we as a couple if we don't have children? So it really makes you start questioning a lot of things and starts making you think about what does the future then look like for us. I think having the strength to have those conversations makes you realize just how strong the relationship is, that, you know, you can do that and you don't fall apart and you continue to support each other. And a lot of this probably sounds cliche. Ultimately, going through those tough times together, it can make or break you.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, mate.
We don't shy away from cliches here, because we've said many times, like, the reason they become cliches is because they're true. But yeah, and that's very poignant what you said, and it's very true. Communication is key anyway, especially in such a really difficult period of your life, and the treatments and something that extends, and as it has for you over years. And also, it's not just hard conversations, it's like hard visualizations. You're saying, like, really sitting there and considering what your future could look like in certain situations or others, like that. It's hard to do, and not like those lucky buggers who just conceive without giving it too much thought. They will have no idea ever, like, how hard those conversations and visualizations can be, because they are. And you did that. You did the hard work. Like you said, you even considered alternate routes to parenthood, which shows just how deeply it matters to both of you. That's only a good thing. You've done that work, and it ain't easy.
You've said that you're 6 months pregnant and you're heading into the next phase now. Sean likes to call it the carnage that will come, because it does.
Squeaky bum time.
Like, how has your experience prepared you for fatherhood? That's a question that I think, it's a deep question that, but I think it's a very valid one here. I'd like to know.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I think for me, it's almost made me more prepared than I could have ever been. I think going through this journey for a number of years and realizing just how badly you want it, it almost puts you into that situation that you're already doing absolutely everything you can for a child that isn't even here yet. So it almost puts you into that position of, once you become a father, a lot of people will do absolutely everything that they can for that child. So it's put me into that mindset before they're even here. So I think it gives you like a renewed sense of purpose in a way. And yeah, it drives you forward.
Yeah, it's I generally think that everything I went through to have my children definitely shapes you as a father. It shapes you in terms of how you approach everything. Everything, you, even the tough times, you take those and you're grateful for them.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's not tough. In a year's time, I'll send you a message and go, you're right, mate. And you'll go, cool.
Yeah.
But it's part of it. And yeah, man, it's an exciting time for you and the missus.
Yeah, I remember my friend said to me, not last week, maybe week before, and sums it up so nicely, that he said, it'll be the hardest thing that you ever do, but the easiest decision you'll ever make.
Yeah.
I just thought that was spot on.
Yeah, definitely. It is. It is the, I say a similar thing, like, it's the hardest job I'll ever have, but it's the best one.
Like, yeah.
You won't get everything right, but you learn and you move on. It's the beauty of fatherhood, I think. Quite often, I'm sure Sean will agree, like, you sit there and reflect and go, I didn't quite get that one right, but next time you get it right. It's a continuous circle of evolution. And going through what you've been through, you appreciate it so much more. I say that, I've been through it. That's my reflection. I'm sure others that haven't been appreciate it just as much, but you can't help but just hold them a little bit tighter.
Yeah, for sure. I think over the last 6 months, as much as like we've really tried to embrace the pregnancy and really enjoy the pregnancy for what it is, but I think there's always that little piece in the back of the mind that you just need to make it to the next hurdle.
Yeah.
And I think this is what a lot of people haven't spoke about, in that getting to a positive pregnancy test is just one of the first hurdles, and then making it to the blood test and getting a good HCG result, and then getting to the viability scan, and then getting to the 12-week mark. So although we've been ecstatic to be in the position that we're in, at the same time, there's almost that element of cautiousness that, you know, we need to make it to this milestone, and then we need to make it to the next milestone. But we've really embraced the pregnancy and enjoyed the pregnancy and enjoyed everything that goes with it. But at the same time, I think you're so much more aware of everything that goes into it when you've gone through IVF. You're so much more informed. It's not a case of ignorance is bliss. You're constantly waiting for the next target, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, I was exactly the same. Like you said, you become more aware of like just the shit that life can throw up, really. And yeah, I remember just like constantly counting down to the next milestone, like you said, the next scan, next safety point and all that. And,
yeah.
But you just learn to someone the other day described it to me as like a series of 2 week waits all throughout. And it's so true. And you learn to live in that moment, but just keeping one eye on the future as well, and just knowing where the end result is, what the target is, but then staying in the present and just having to deal with it in the moment. And the weeks like do roll on, and yeah, you get to that all important date at some point, but it's just that riding out that crushing anxiety at times for real.
It is. The anxiety is real, isn't it, lads? It's
yeah, for sure.
And
yeah,
it's an anxiety you can't do anything about. Sean's just perfect, put it perfectly. You just have to ride it out. But no, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing your journey with us. And obviously, we wish you all the luck and enjoy this pregnancy and the outcome. We always finish with the same question. And that is, if you could give a bit of advice regarding fertility, what would it be?
I think for me, don't bury your head in the sand, and you know, take some ownership over the situation a little bit earlier. Do your own research and try to learn as much as you possibly can about the situation, and ultimately ask for help and seek help earlier. I think a lot of people have a natural tendency to maybe either ignore the problem or try and solve the problem by themselves before reaching out and finding support. I just think if I was to do things differently, I think I would have found help a lot earlier, because then it makes the education, the research, the decision making a lot easier. And I've always had a problem solving mindset. Mm. And I think that comes from what I do as a job. I always try and fix other people's problems. So I took it upon myself at times to try and fix the problem myself. But that's not always possible. So I think the one thing I would do differently in that one bit of advice would be willing to ask for help at the earliest opportunity.
Great bit of advice.
Yeah. And one that, yeah, we completely agree with. And through our own experiences, learned it massively. It helps as well.
So, yeah, fantastic bit of advice, mate. And I, as Sean said, totally agree. It's been a complete pleasure, my friend, and we shall let you be and enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for so much for being just so open. It's going to help a lot of guys.
Pleasure's all mine. What you guys have brought to us, the amount of support, the advice, the resources, genuinely is invaluable. And that's why I wanted to do my little bit and give back.
Cheers, mate. We really appreciate that. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon, mate.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to talk about in the mailbag, please drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message that comes through. And if you'd like a bit more guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by men who get it. For the latest updates, follow us on social media at Male Fertility Podcast. Remember, you're not alone.